Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, and every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show is going to bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, Answers with the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. I'm sure many of you were expecting to hear Alan's voice this morning, but we are reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to respond quickly, be it locating a runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abductive child. Now, I spoke to Alan yesterday and learned he was asked again to find a runaway girl that was being exploited in one of these prostitution rings, and he is off somewhere on the East Coast doing what he does. And so we want to wish Alan, of course, great swift success in rescuing this child. And I hope everything is safe, and looking forward to having you here next week on the show. Now, today we've got a very special show for our listeners, and I have a special co-host and a great guest. The topic for today's show is motherhood. We're looking at pregnancy, childbirth, and being a mother in today's world. And it probably wouldn't do it justice for Alan and myself to do a show like this without leaders in the field and women in general. So we're pushing the testosterone to the left here and bringing on some women to help us on an area that they definitely excel in better than us. And I've asked a colleague of mine, a mother, a therapist, and among other things, a good friend of mine, Joelle Jacobson, to join us. Joelle has worked in the mental health field for 20 years. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice, she's been a school counselor, and she's worked extensively in the fields of substance use disorders, eating disorders, currently serves as an outreach director for the Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation. She previously worked for Center for Discovery. She utilizes her substantial background as a therapist, combining work as a treatment placement specialist, educating public and professionals in the mental health addiction field. She's been on many, many television, radio shows. I just got to see her on ABC News the other night, which was very cool. And Joelle also holds a master's, like I said, in marriage and family therapy, school counseling from Phillips Graduate School. And we are very, very thankful that she was able to join us today. Thanks for helping us and stepping in, Joelle.
I'm really looking forward to this show. Speaking with Bailey, this sounds like an incredible book and will help a lot of moms out there. So looking forward to getting started.
And for you, you know, being a mom of two and obviously a very successful professional, did having kids directly kind of influence your work?
You know, having children was probably what was absolutely the most important thing I've ever done in my life. My life was not the same after I had children, and in a good way. But I definitely think there is a struggle for a working parent who has children to give, you know, 100% to your children and try to give that 100% to work as well. And obviously, we know that number doesn't add up. So it's trying to find a balance between both, and having said that, family, you know, should always come first, and your children are a product of your parenting, and what happens to them is absolutely on the parent. So it's important to be as healthy of a parent as you possibly can, and if you've had trauma and other issues in your life that may preclude that from happening, then it's important to to get help on that so you, again, can be the healthiest parent you can be to that child.
And there's so many mothers out there, and there's so many mothers-to-be out there that are looking for answers. And today, we are very, very lucky to have someone who specializes in this. We're honored today to have Bailey Gaddis on the show. And a lot of our listeners out there might know her from reading or watching like shows like Disney's Babel, reading Cosmopolitan, Huffington Post, Red Book, many other media news outlets she's been on. But what you might not know about Bailey is that she spent years as a childbirth educator. She was a birth doula, a hypnotherapist, and Bailey embarked on her immersion in the pregnancy and birthing industry when she started working with the Egg Donor and Surrogacy Agency. In her years working as an egg donor and surrogacy coordinator, Bailey developed a deep respect and love for the miracle of pregnancy, childbirth, and parenthood. After many years working with pregnant women and new mothers, Bailey officially joined the club when she became pregnant. She experienced firsthand the multitudes of decisions, information, and opinions that abound in pregnancy, birthing, and the parenting worlds. Her intuition quickly led her to the birth preparation philosophy of hypnobirthing, which hopefully we'll talk about a little bit today, the Mongon method. And she felt at home in this peaceful, supportive, and spiritual method, and soon had the desire to pass this message on to fellow soon-to-be parents. Bailey became a certified hypnobirthing practitioner soon after the birth of her son, and has been teaching this transformative method of childbirth ever since. In addition to hypnobirthing classes, Bailey is also, like I mentioned, a birthing doula and able to provide a comprehensive support to soon-to-be parents through early birthing preparation up to and after the sacred welcoming of their new baby. She's here to teach us some of the wonderful things she's learned and also tell us about her new book, Feng Shui Mommy. So without further ado, I'm very excited to welcome Bailey to Answers for the Family.
Hi, how's it going?
We are doing great. Obviously, you've been very busy.
Yes, to say the least.
In the new book, I think it's a great place to start if you're okay with that. Tell us a little bit about, even for people who don't know what feng shui is, like myself, what is it and what's it got to do with being a mom?
That's a great question. So before I became pregnant, I actually worked for a while as a home organizer in Los Angeles. And interestingly enough, the main thing I did was help others design their nurseries. And so what I did is I used one of the basic feng shui principles to create a really soothing exterior space. But then when I became pregnant, I started thinking about, you know, how important the energy within us is. So feng shui, to put it simply, is the Chinese philosophy of harmonizing humans with the energy in our surrounding environment. So, you know, the energy in our mind and our body and our spirit is just as important, or in my case, and in the case of a lot of women I work with, even more important than, you know, what's going on around us. So the book really focuses on that, you know, how the woman can nurture her mind, her body, and her spirit, you know, on the journey into motherhood. So I kind of created my own new definition of feng shui, but, you know, I felt like it really worked.
You know, and we, I'm not bragging, but we were able to get an early copy of the book, and Joel and I read it and love it. But the one thing I was curious about is, was it just having your own son, or what really inspired you to write the book? Because I know that you've done a lot of writing for different outlets, but this is much more comprehensive.
Yeah, you know, the initial impetus was definitely my own journey, and even, I mean, I'm so lucky, I'm surrounded by incredible women, my mother, my mother-in-law, they're both nurses. I mean, so I had so much information, but I still felt really lost and confused, and so that sparked the idea. But really, when I became a birth doula and I was actually present at births, and I was able to see how different each and every birth is, regardless if, you know, on paper the births sound the same, every woman has a different experience. And so that really inspired me to go all in with the book and write something that could really support all women in finding that intuition, you know, and really writing their own story, if you will, as they move through this journey.
When you're working with a lot of these mothers, because I remember when my wife went through her pregnancy, and it seemed like, I felt like we were somewhat lost in the sense of there wasn't a lot of guidance. There wasn't a lot of people kind of explaining things, and it just almost seemed like we were on our own. Is that something you've noticed with a lot of the mothers you work with?
Shockingly, yes. I mean, it seems like there is so much information out there, but the women I talked to, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I found you. I just couldn't find anything that resonated with me. And what I think is happening now, and luckily I think, you know, the tides are changing, but I think there's a lot of information out there to support, you know, a wholly natural birth. You know, if you're into that, you can get support. Or if you know for sure that you want medication or you want to schedule that C-section, you can find, you know, kind of a team for that. But there's nothing in between. There's nothing really for women that aren't quite sure and they don't want somebody to tell them, oh, this is how you have to do it. They want to receive the information, but also, you know, receive the permission really to make their own decisions. So that's what I'm hoping, you know, this book can do is be that safe space where they can come and become informed, but then also be empowered to make their own choices.
Have you noticed fathers getting more involved in the process? Because when I was reading the book, you know, it made a lot of sense to me, and it made me think about all the different ways I could have been more influential or done more to create a different atmosphere. Are you getting feedback from the women you're working with that fathers are becoming more involved, or is it the same kind of?
No, absolutely. And even just in the past years that I've been teaching and attending births, more and more fathers are coming to the classes. They are requesting to be more involved in the birth itself. And that's really, really interesting to see. And even my own partner, Eric, he's becoming more and more interested. And, you know, when we have our next child, you know, he's really, really curious and really wants to be more involved. So yeah, I think dads are really, really stepping up and wanting to participate more. I just had the pleasure of meeting this really great daddy blogger. He has the blog Daddy Doing Work, and we just had a wonderful conversation about, you know, how he's really advocating for fathers to become more involved and how capable, you know, fathers really are when they're also given permission to, you know, step into that role of nurturer.
Bailey, you in your book, it includes sections about four trimesters, which is brilliant. But of course, there are only three trimesters in a pregnancy. So I love how you added the fourth trimester because it absolutely is a fourth trimester. So could you explain a little bit about that for the people who haven't read your book?
I was going to say maybe she didn't have math class.
Right. No, it's very, very clever. Very clever. The fourth trimester. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so the fourth trimester, quote unquote, is the first 3 months of baby's life out of the womb. And a lot of people believe that the babies really aren't ready to come out of the womb until about 12 months. But if they waited that long, their heads would be too big to sit out of the birth passage. So that's why babies are born around that 40-week mark, you know, give or take a few weeks. And, you know, I call it, or me and so many other women call it the fourth trimester because in so many ways, this is the most challenging time, you know, more so than the morning sickness in the first trimester, you know, the discomfort in being so big in your third trimester. Because in the fourth trimester, the baby is outside of you. So instead of the mother just being able to, you know, take care of her own body and trust that her baby will be taken care of, she's now having to do double duty. So she's having to take care of her own body, but also having to, you know, breastfeed and change diapers. And if she's, you know, having to mix formula, doing that. And, you know, all of the tasks that she needs to do have suddenly doubled. And she's also experiencing incredible hormonal shifts. You know, it's so common, you know, to see the postpartum blues or depression. So a lot of women are dealing with that. There's just so much there, and so I thought it was really essential for readers to be supported, you know, beyond the birth. Because for me, all of the books ended when you had the baby. It's like, okay, great, congratulations, now go home, and I had no idea what to do. So in the book, you know, I offer support with, you know, taking care of the baby, you know, really common baby care questions, breastfeeding support if that's what the woman is choosing to do. questions about, you know, how she can bond, how she can take care of herself. And I've heard from a lot of women that that's actually their favorite section. I just felt totally clueless how I was in that fourth trimester.
Right. No, that's why I was thinking this is fabulous to bring this up, because I've really not read anything about the fourth trimester. So I think, you know, if you're not actually in the field, you wouldn't know about it. A caller. I have a question from a caller that I think is pertinent to ask right now after what you just said. It's actually Sandy from Delaware, and her question is, I suffer from depression and I'm taking an antidepressant that doesn't cross the placenta. I'm worried about postpartum depression as my chances are high that I end up with it after my baby is born. Are there any mindfulness exercises in the book that will help me with my anxiety about that?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I was so happy to be able to include were, let's see, over 20 relaxation recordings. And there's two in particular that are coming up in my mind right now. I have one that's in the special circumstances chapter, and women can download this for free. It's about 15 minutes. And with the special circumstances, even though, you know, it's a slightly different than what she's talking about, what the point of it is being gentle on yourself, you know, when everything doesn't go the way you expected it to or the way you wanted it to. And, you know, and of course, with the feelings of depression, we don't want to feel that way, but it's there, you know, and it sounds like she's doing what she can to manage it. So I think that would be really helpful in the fear release chapter. Mm-hmm. I have an exercise and the relaxation recording would be great, but this is about like a 2-minute exercise where the woman just allows herself to feel what she's feeling, and to give herself space for those emotions to move through her, and then to look at her life, you know, from that clear perspective. And they've done research showing that, you know, when we have a big emotion come up, you know, not to say it doesn't come up again, but it takes about 90 seconds for the strength of it to move through us. And so that exercise works along those lines. And then in the self-care chapter, mm-hmm. in the fourth trimester, I have a lot of exercises that are 100% geared towards nurturing the woman and, you know, recognizing that she deserves to feel good, and that doesn't always happen right away. You know, we always think, oh, when I have my baby, I'll feel blissful and perfect and I'll be overwhelmed with love. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And I think we can, or at least for me, I experienced a little bit of the postpartum blues, and I think I made it even worse by getting down on myself, by thinking there's something wrong with me for feeling this way. And so for her, I think, you know, realizing that there's nothing wrong with her, this is, for a lot of women, part of the journey, and to try to love herself through that.
Oh, that's a great answer. Thank you so much.
That really is.
Thank you.
And I, you know, it's interesting, when I was watching, I think in retrospect, going through our pregnancy, the idea of my wife having to go from, you know, not having a child in the house to the role of being a mother is such a profound change in your identity, your role. And today's woman has so much stress on them and so much going on that I think that a book like this is important, because I think, and there's just so much anxiety in general about it. And so for the women out there listening, or the men that are in their first trimester per se, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think especially in that first trimester, it's a really great time to tune in to your intuition. And what I mean by that is, you know, tuning in to that feeling that we have, or the maternal instincts or paternal instincts that really, I believe, a lot of parents start developing from that first trimester. And so to learn what that sounds like, and then to learn to honor it. And what the exercise that I have in the book around that is to ask yourself a question, and you can start small, like, what do I feel like eating right now? Or what movie do I want to watch? And listening to that first answer that comes up before our mind starts chattering and we start analyzing everything, you know, just trusting that first little answer that I equate to the intuition. And then from there, you know, once you see how your life often becomes a lot easier and a lot less stressful when you're trusting that voice, then when you step into making the decisions that, that often we're faced with in the first trimester, like choosing a medical care provider, beginning to think about where we want to birth, you know, if we want interventions or not, then your intuition is already finely tuned, and you know what it sounds like, and you know how good it feels to listen to it. And so it can really help to guide you in making decisions that, that are best for your unique needs during that, that journey, and for fathers as well, because it can feel so overwhelming. You know, how do I support my partner? You know, I don't know what to say or do. You know, he can also listen to that intuition to best support her.
So, Bailey, there's actually a question that's come up from a caller, and it certainly is around the intuition piece, because I think it's more challenging for people that don't grow up in a healthy environment to have that intuition.
Right.
And so it's interesting, this question. It's from Nicole from Florida. I grew up in an abusive household and did not have a healthy maternal role model. Is there anything in your book that can help me with parenting and the anxiety that comes up when I feel I won't be a healthy mom because of what I experienced?
Oh, that is such a good question. One of my closest friends who I work with in the birth industry, she has a very similar story, and we've actually talked about this a lot, you know, and what worked for her, and luckily we had these conversations before I wrote the book. So a lot of the inspiration I received from her is in it. And there's a few different things. The first thing that comes to mind is releasing shame, because I think it's really common for those who experience abuse, even though they in no way need to feel shame, they do, and you feel shameful that you don't feel like, or you don't know how to be a mother, and there's so much negative self-talk. So number one, just recognizing that that can be a part of it, and a lot of times noticing something is the first step to dissolving it. So knowing that there might be shame, but you don't deserve to feel that way. And number two, seeking out a really supportive community of women, And one nice thing that we can get from social media, I have a lot of clients who live in rural areas, and it's hard for them to create a community of women that can physically, you know, come and be at their house, but they find a community on Instagram or Facebook, or they start private messaging with somebody that has, you know, an ideology that they really resonate with, and they start to essentially curate, you know, the inspiration, the women that they have in their lives. And from there, they start building up this new family of people that make them feel worthy and knowledgeable. And they find mothers who are mothering in the way that they want to mother.
You know, it's fascinating hearing you say that, because I remember as a child, or I don't remember the Mommy and Me groups, but I remember being told, I went to Mommy and Me groups, and I remember my wife going to them. But you don't hear about groups for pregnancy. You hear about them post-birth.
Right, absolutely. And it's still actually not that common. You know, I live near Los Angeles, so that's one of the rare places that we have a group for everything. But I've had a lot of clients that create their own groups. And so what they'll do is they'll use, oh my gosh, what is the service? It's like a meetup or something like that. And they can send out a request for pregnant women in their area that want to get together. Or, you know, they'll, again, research mommy groups in an area, in their area on Facebook, and just ask those moms, hey, do you know any, you know, pregnant women that I might be able to connect with? And I've had clients have a lot of success with that. You know, so just reaching out and asking, you know, where are the pregnant women? And then setting up your own group, you know, going on walks, meeting for tea, you know, just finding those women and utilizing their support.
Very cool. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to discuss what happens once the baby's born. And for everyone listening out there, I want to remind you that we're speaking with Bailey Gaddis. The book is Feng Shui Mommy, Creating Balance and Harmony for Blissful Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood. We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. We are joined by Bailey Gaddis. Bailey, I teased a little bit about having the baby being born, but for me that was quite a culture shock and quite a shock to the system. And again, there wasn't a lot of advice besides from parents. So from an expert in the field and someone who's been doing this a long time, what's your best piece of advice for women once their baby, or men too, once their baby arrives?
Oh, that's a really good question. The first thing would be to cut yourself some slack because, you know, while we have those really great instincts that that come up usually whether we expect them or not, we still have moments where we make a decision that we look back on and like, oh man, if I had only done this, it would have worked out so much better. So to realize that we all have those moments, number one, that's part of the learning process. I still mess up all the time with parenting. My son's almost 4, and I joke, but in a serious way, that my husband is a much better parent than I am, and so he's always teaching me. I'm far from perfect. So just cutting yourself some slack for that. And then beyond that, asking for support. And again, I say this repeatedly in the book and give really concrete tools about how to actually do this, because when we do it all on our own, we get totally overwhelmed. And I work with a lot of single mothers, so it's harder for them to ask for support because they don't have that built-in support with a partner. And so they're really clear with, you know, asking this specific girlfriend who's really good with the baby to come over every Tuesday from 3 to 6. So the mom can take a nap or take a shower, you know, and then asking this man that she knows is a good cook to maybe cook her a meal, you know, Wednesdays and Fridays, you know. So to be really specific with the people in your life about how they can support you. And then in a lot of different towns and cities, there are great programs that are there to support new parents. I'm a volunteer for a local organization called the Nan Tolbert Center, and they have something called Parent Care. And so I go to the home of a new mother twice a week for about 2 or 3 hours, and I do whatever she wants. I hold the baby, I do dishes, you know, I just do anything that will make her life a little bit easier. Because that whole "it takes a village" saying is true, but it's something that we don't see a lot of, at least in our culture, unfortunately.
You know, that's fascinating when you say that, because I was thinking, you know, we're becoming so isolated as a culture. And, you know, and you look at other cultures, there's a lot more collectivism and a lot more, community-based, you know, child raising. Do you see books like this and advocates like you kind of hopefully starting to create that? I mean, I think in certain pockets we have it within the church and other places, temples, yada, yada, yada. But we really see more isolation than anything now.
Absolutely. And luckily, I am seeing more and more public figures, you know, writers, giving women permission to not do it all, you know, because I think, you know, and I experience this. This is a script that I have in my own head. It's like, you need to be a career woman and a great mom. And like, you need to be everything all the time. And that is so overwhelming. And I think because of that, you know, and because of that pride, so many of us don't even share that we need support. You know, so I think that's the first step, is moms just asking. And I was so amazed when I just started asking for support, how many people were so willing to say yes. So again, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles we need to get over, is as women, is realizing we are being a better mother and a better, you know, care provider for ourselves when we say, you know what, I can't do it all and I need help.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, as I'm reading the book, what I'm thinking, because, you know, my background's in research and more science, well, this is science too, but it, to me, the book is basically pointing out of this idea of, as a mother, you really want to be more parasympathetic, dominant, coming from a, you know, a more relaxed state, able to handle anxiety. And I think about all these young mothers who are running around juggling 20 things, 30 things at once. It's impossible, I would think, to really be more parasympathetic, dominant. Yet, by asking people and by doing kind of the specific direction in the book, they can attain this. Is that kind of the angle?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like I say, one of the first lines in the book is, this is the book I needed to read, because that's so true. And the first, you know, 6 months probably of my son's life, I was almost entirely living in the sympathetic room of my nervous system, you know, that emergency room. I was viewing everything as an emergency. You know, I was rarely breathing. You know, I was, my face was red. I was sweating a lot. I mean, I was just so anxious. And so all of the tools that I write about in the book on how to go from, you know, that metaphorical emergency room into the healing room, the parasympathetic sphere, are all tools that I use. And, you know, there are things that I still use on a daily basis to get back to that state of calm. And of course, I'm not always there, but they work, you know. And I used to think, oh, everybody just tells me to breathe, but that doesn't really work. But it's amazing, you know, it's almost impossible to be in that panic state when we're just simply taking deep breaths, which is why I open each chapter with a really simple breathing exercise, you know, just settle down a little bit.
And it's crazy, you know, all the research they show when you are in that settled down, how much better you can use your brain and how much more effective you are. So, I mean, this is true science here, which is amazing. So as the male in the group here, I have a question, because I read, and this is maybe a little off topic, but, you know, I'm reading all these new ways of having births, and people are having, you know, excuse my ignorance, but I think they're having births in bathtubs and all these different things.
Yeah.
and to me, it's a whole new world. But since I have you on the call, I'm curious, what is your opinion of really the best way to give birth?
That is a great question. And, you know, in my community, I live in LA, California, and there's definitely, you know, this huge home birth movement, and I come from Texas originally, and there a lot of people believe the best way to birth is, you know, just get that epidural, honey, you know, and schedule your C-section. And so my opinion on the best way to birth is, in whatever way the woman feels best suits her needs. And that is going to be different for each and every woman. You know, some women have special circumstances that require that they need some intervention. Some women have past trauma. And, you know, a C-section for one reason or another is really the best option for them. Some women have a horrible fear of hospitals, and a home birth is a great choice. You know, so there is not one right way. And I think that's really exciting. I think that really opens the door for so many different possibilities. And also for the women to know that, you know, while we can prepare so much, and, you know, we can really create this clear vision of the type of birth we want, that once we're actually moving through the process of birth, we kind of have to, like, give it up to the universe, if you will. You know, I think about actors who spend months and months preparing for a role, and then when they actually have to perform, they just let it all go and trust that whatever needs to come up will come up. And I think birth is really similar. You know, when we're actually moving through it, there's only so much we can do, you know, to control the outcome and to control, or, you know, to control how we process the outcome. We just have to just go with it. And And I've seen a lot of births where the women are so set, you know, in that birth plan and set, like, no, like, this is the way I'm supposed to birth. And they hold on to it so tightly that they really don't progress. And it's like they're fighting against their body. And so one of the biggest things, honestly, that I do as a birth doula is I nurture the woman through the journey of change and throughout the stages. You know, if it looks like, oh yeah, she might need to have a hospital transfer, and you know, for her, it looks like she's going to choose that an epidural is best. And my role is to help her feel okay with that, and to trust those instincts as she moves through it. So that's a long way of saying that, yeah, whatever feels best for her is the right way.
Yeah, I mean,
if that makes sense.
Not to, you know, overly self-disclose, but when my daughter was born, you know, my wife had some issues with her feeding tube, and she had to, and the baby was turned a certain way, yada yada yada. She had no choice. We had to have a C-section. But I almost feel like in this pocket of LA, there was almost like a shaming going on, and she felt like, you know, like there was, you needed to have more street cred the way you had your baby or something. I mean, it's crazy. Yet she had no choice to have our baby that way. She was a preemie and the whole thing, and she had to come out way early. But the social pressure, I feel like, from, you know, women in the community was brutal.
Yeah, I experienced that a lot, and you know, in my community as well. And I've heard, you know, women say, like, oh, well, I'm sure that there's something that you could have done to not have to have that C-section. You know, I mean, really insensitive comments. And you know, in my opinion, even if there was something, you know, if a woman, say, for example, had a cesarean section because she had a breech baby, and I've literally heard this said to a woman who had a cesarean because of that, somebody said, well, wasn't there a doctor that would have done a breech vaginal delivery? And, you know, even if the answer was yes, maybe that woman felt more comfortable with the C-section, and there is nothing wrong with that. You know, she needs to do what feels best to her. And yeah, in the case of most C-sections, I mean, we're so blessed that is an option, because I have no doubt that it saves probably millions of babies and mothers to have modern medicine at our disposal if we need it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely split down the middle on the C-section and a natural birth, certainly, and very opinionated, very opinionated people speaking about that. There's a question that came in that I think is very interesting. You know, we, Matt and I both work in the field of recovery for Hazelden Betty Ford, and a lot of the struggle for some of the moms, and especially new moms, is, you know, when they relapse, how are they going to get into treatment, and who's going to watch the baby, and during the time of, you know, breastfeeding, and when there's a new baby, it's even harder because, you know, especially if you don't have the means to have a nanny there or an overnight nurse to help out the partner. And so we try to come up with different solutions to have the mom come in, as it's so important to take care of yourself when you are in your disease, especially for the child as well. So you need a healthy parent. And so a question just came in from a mom. She is in Philadelphia, and name is Heather. The question is, I'm in recovery and just had a baby. I've been going to AA meetings, and I'm feeling more shame about being there with my baby because I feel like I shouldn't have had her, knowing I may have passed on the disease of addiction to her, and she may end up like me in AA meetings with her baby. She's everything to me, and I feel like I was being selfish by having her. Is there anything in the book that can help me with the shame I'm feeling?
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. The chapter about caring for herself, because, you know, what I hear from that is, you know, again, not giving herself permission to be gentle with herself and to love herself through it, you know, and to feel proud, you know, for saying, okay, it is not easy to get to an AA meeting with a baby. And it is not easy to feel that shame, but I'm doing it anyways. You know, so what I'm hearing in my head when I hear that little piece of her story is, oh my gosh, like that's amazing. She deserves to feel so good about herself for showing up, you know, and doing that. And I mean, what a good mother she sounds like, because, you know, she's thinking about, you know, her child's future, and, you know, she's really aware, and I want to hug her. You know, so I think the self-care chapter would really help, and there's really specific tools, you know, the breathing exercise, the relaxation recording, and what I would, you know, recommend for her specifically before and after going to a meeting is, you know, before getting out of the car, doing the breathing exercise in this chapter, or, you know, just listening to the recording really quickly in a parked car, not when she was driving. You know, and then afterwards, if she has, you know, these really big feelings coming up, to just take that moment. You know, these breathing exercises take like 30 seconds. She can do it while she's holding her baby, or listen to the recording while she's holding her baby, and just really allow herself to feel that, but then take the steps to nurture herself. And then something else I was thinking of is, you know, when you know that, you know, you have this addiction, and, you know, once I have my baby, you know, it might come back, or, you know, so many different thoughts, and seeking out, you know, the organization that I spoke about, the Nan Tolbert Center, you know, organizations that offer, you know, a lot of relief if you don't have the means, you know, to pay for different forms of therapy or childcare, you know, and be proactive in that, you know, seeking out those types of places when you're pregnant, so you already have this built-in support system when your baby comes out, because a lot of mothers know that once the baby's out, you know, doing something as simple as just sending an email can feel so overwhelming, you know, so doing that research when the baby's out can just feel like too much. So doing that before you have the baby can be great. And then, you know, and if you already have the child, you know, and they're taking a nap, you know, really be proactive and seeking out as much support as you can.
That's excellent advice. Thank you so much. Yeah. Now there's another question on the opposite side of the spectrum from someone who is claiming she's not a spiritual person. This is Tamara from New York. She says, I'm not a very spiritual person, but I'm willing to try this approach in my pregnancy. I'm assuming she's talking about your book. As I can't get through the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, without having a complete panic attack. How should I prepare to read your book?
Oh, well, that's a great question. And yeah, while I definitely have, you know, at least my own, let's see, my own perception of spirituality kind of mixed in, I think in a lot of ways, you know, what the book is just a clear, non-threatening way of preparing for childbirth and motherhood. And I make it really clear in the book, it's like, you do not have to subscribe to every single word that I say. You know, this is, you know, a collection of a lot of knowledge from, you know, a lot of wonderful women and research and whatnot. But, you know, but it's still, of course, you know, my perception. And so what I tell women is, for the pieces that really resonate with you, that's great. You know, hold on to those pieces. And, you know, if you get to a section that's, you know, more spiritual and you're not really vibing with it, like, you don't have to totally agree with it to still benefit from the book. And I was very, very intentional in writing this book to not make it something that is going to scare the woman and to give her anxiety. You know, and I still really feel like I give all the pertinent information, and she will be prepared as much as you can be, you know, for the unexpected journey of childbirth. But yeah, you'll be prepared without being scared. And even in, you know, the special circumstances chapter, I explain what a lot of the common special circumstances are, but because I know that hopefully all of these women have a wonderful medical care provider that can get into all of the medical specifics, which are different for each and every woman, what I'm doing is helping them feel okay with the unknown and to nurture themselves through that. So I'm taking all of the anxiety that is so common, you know, in this journey and giving tools to do that.
Have you found that working with women who are more type A have more challenges, especially at the beginning, even through the toddler years, just organization of the household and the toys everywhere and not being able to kind of control everything? Have you found that to be a bigger issue and a bigger source of anxiety for, you know, obviously the mom, but then passed on to the baby as well?
Yes, and you're talking to one of those women. Yeah, it's something like I had my own moment yesterday. I was going to my house, like, oh my God, we have too much stuff. There's stuff everywhere. I had this moment, and I did. I had to sit down and listen to one of the relaxation recordings in the book. I'm like, okay, I'm totally getting overwhelmed right now. I think that desire to plan everything and to control everything, and I think of myself as kind of an extreme example, actually. Like, I really like to know what's going to happen, and I like to have my expectations be met. And so this journey, you know, through motherhood and childbirth, you know, it's been a great lesson in having to let go of a lot of that. And so I think type A women, we actually have to do more of, you know, the relaxation techniques, more of the breathing. And because, you know, we are planners, we actually have to schedule in that relaxation in the day. Because I find, you know, myself, if I don't say, okay, at this time, I'm just going to sit down for 10 minutes and meditate, or at the top of every hour, I'm going to make sure that I'm breathing, that my to-do list takes over my day. And I just forget to breathe. I forget to relax. I forget to have that quality time with my son. So, you know, I think utilize your type A personality and schedule in that relaxation. Mm-hmm. And it definitely affects our babies. My son was an infant, and, you know, even now, actually, as a 4-year-old, when I'm feeling really tense and I'm not breathing and I'm feeling anxiety, he starts acting out more and he doesn't listen. You know, I mean, he is so attuned to how I'm feeling, and I can see how he responds. You know, it's directly correlated to how I'm feeling. When I start to relax, he starts to relax. So,
Absolutely.
It's one of the breath work.
Right. Well, that's good. You saw that and you came up with a solution. And I'm sure, you know, everything in the book is really going to help moms. I'm really hoping that a lot of people read your book. A lot of great exercises. And, you know, the other question I had was, when you or have you worked with moms who were sexually abused as babies or infants? And if so, how has that been for them when the baby arrives and what that's like for them?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, kind of thinking about, you know, the cesarean births, two women specifically that I worked with that went through that when they were thinking about what type of birth they wanted to have, yeah. A vaginal delivery brought up a lot of anxiety with them. And both of these women, you know, did a lot of work with different therapists and both found, you know, medical care providers that they really trusted. But both of them, they elected to have a cesarean birth, you know, and they really felt like this is the type of birth I have to have, you know, while they were both very proactive in, you know, as much as they could, you know, working through that trauma, they needed a cesarean birth. And I'm not saying that's, you know, what all women that experience that we need to have, but, just recognizing that'll still affect you. And, you know, it brings up a lot specifically during childbirth, but then, in motherhood, you know, both of these moms had a lot more anxiety. You know, they were really nervous about leaving their child, about allowing their child to be examined by a pediatrician, by really letting anybody else hold their baby. And what I said with both of them, and I did a lot of work with them privately as a hypnotherapist, is be gentle with yourself. And I know I've said that a lot, but you don't have to force yourself into, you know, leaving your baby for long periods of time to make yourself get comfortable with it. And that was advice they were receiving from friends. It's like, well, you just have to power through it, you know, just get over it. And that didn't work for them. That brought up even more anxiety. So just taking, you know, those baby steps and, you know, having a trusted friend come over and hold the baby for 10 minutes while you sit in the room, or, you know, just take, again, those really small steps in discovering, you know, how you're going to process motherhood and continuing to go to, you know, the therapist, or, you know, not thinking like, oh, I'm just too busy now, I have to give up, you know, that treatment, you know, to really do all you can to continue to receive that professional support.
Well, Bailey, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is we've had more people write into the show and ask questions than we've had in a long time. So thank you for writing in, people. And obviously the topic is very interesting. The bad news is we're running out of time, and I still have so many more questions for you, so you're going to have to come back on the show again.
I would love that.
Before we leave, though, to put a bow on it, what, you know, just for the listeners out there and the women out there, what do you most hope that they'll really take away from this book?
Oh, I would say a knowingness that you deserve to write your own story. You deserve to create your own method of childbirth. You deserve to create your own type of mothering. You know, this is really your journey, and you deserve to claim that.
Beautiful. And the book is coming. What's the actual release date on the book?
So the book has already been released. It came out on Mother's Day, so it's now available on Amazon and all major bookstores, and there's plenty of information on my website, baileygaddis.com.
I thought I was cool because I got it early.
Yeah, exactly.
the book is Feng Shui Mommy, Creating Balance and Harmony for Blissful Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood. I want to really, really thank Bailey for coming on. I want to thank Joelle for joining us. Obviously wish Alan the best of luck. And for those listeners out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, June 19th, when we are joined by Dr. John DeGarmo, director of the Foster Care Institute, to discuss why foster kids in foster care or anywhere in America are vulnerable to human trafficking. Bailey, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Joelle, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure. Good luck, Bailey.
And thank you, everyone.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.